Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Shalom, shalom. The peace of God be with you all. My name is Father Mitch Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest from Loyola University in Chicago, where I'm a professor of Old Testament. And we're at this last stage of the career of the prophet Isaiah, the time when the people of Judah are attacked and severely punished and defeated by the Assyrian king Sennacherib. And at this point, we see that there's lots of fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecies taking place now. Because King Sennacherib, according to his own records, has captured 46 different cities of Judah. And in our last week's episode, we even showed you some of his home photographs in the family album of King Sennacherib of his attack on the city of Lachish, the second most important city in the country of Judah. Now, there's more to say, though, about this. And I'd like to go through some of these problems that we have in terms of the history. Because while on one hand, there's a lot of it we can verify from different sources, we have trouble with others. So we'll take a look at the difficulties, all right? Open up to Isaiah, chapter 37. And we see there, in verse 8, the beginning of a new episode. See, up to this point, we saw that King Sennacherib had sent a messenger to Jerusalem to tell them in Jerusalem to surrender or die. But the prophet Isaiah gave a message from Yahweh, the God of Israel, and said to the people of Judah, don't be afraid of Sennacherib, he won't take the city. Okay, and that's where we left off. Now we begin in verse 8 of chapter 37, and we see that it starts all over again. It's another process. And maybe this was a second episode of Sennacherib versus Hezekiah. It says here, when the commander Rabshakeh returned to Lachish, the city that the king of Assyria was attacking and destroying, and he heard that the king of Assyria had left there. He found him besieging Libna. We don't know where Libna is. It's another city, one of the 46 that King Sennacherib took. And then the king of Assyria heard a report that Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia, had come out to fight against him. Here's a problem. We got a problem. In the year 701, Tirhaka was not the king of Ethiopia and Egypt. Man, we've talked about this before, haven't we? That the Ethiopians from down south had taken up northern Egypt and conquered the whole of Egypt. But the pharaoh who did that was Shabaka. Alright? Now, Tirhaka did become the pharaoh of Egypt and Ethiopia, but not till the year 690. That is 11 years after King Sennacherib first went to Judah. Okay? So this is our problem. And Tirhaka is called the king, but he wasn't the king for another 11 years yet. So that's a difficulty. Well, we'll see that there might be a solution to this. At any rate, Rabshakeh hears about this turmoil that going on, and that the Egyptians are attacking the Assyrians. And we do know that in 701, Pharaoh, an unnamed Pharaoh, we don't have his name exactly, does attack King Sennacherib at the city of Elteke. And Pharaoh loses the battle severely. He just gets his army wiped out by King Sennacherib. Okay? So King Sennacherib has a right to kind of boast about how weak the Egyptian army is. He knows it's so weak because he just defeated them at Elteca. So he sends more messengers to Hezekiah. And he says, thus shall you say to Hezekiah, king of Judah, don't let your God on whom you rely deceive you by saying that Jerusalem will not be handed over to the king of Assyria. In other words, King Sennacherib's messenger accuses Yahweh of deceiving Jerusalem by saying that he'll take care of it. Okay? Now, it's bad enough in that commercial to say it's not nice to fool Mother Nature, right? Well, it's even worse to say that Yahweh is deceiving his own people. God is not going to be pleased with that at all. I don't like to be called a liar, yet alone God should be called a liar, huh? You yourself have heard that the kings of Assyria have done to all the countries. They destroyed them. They just wiped them out. They put them to doom. And the word there is haram. It's a word that really means bad, bad doom. So if the kings of Assyria did this to all the other countries, don't you think they're going to do it to you? And can't you get the message? Did the gods of the nations whom my fathers, that is, the fathers of Sennacherib, Sargon the second especially, Shalmaneser the fifth, and Tiglath-Pileser the third, okay, all of them, nasty, nasty people. These were the Nazis of their day. But instead of just lasting one generation, these Assyrians lasted for many generations, causing widespread destruction. Where is the king of Hamat? Where is the king of Arpad, or the king of the cities of Sepharvaim, Chena, or Iva? They're gone. We don't even know where these places are anymore. They're all gone. So what does Hezekiah do? He takes this letter sent to him by Sennacherib. And King Hezekiah of Judah presents the message to Yahweh. He goes to the temple and he prays to Yahweh. And he says, O Yahweh Sabaoth, God of Israel, enthroned upon the cherubim, you alone are God over all the kingdoms of the earth. You made the heavens and the earth. O Lord, listen. Bend your ear. Give ear. And open your eyes, O Yahweh, and see. Hear all the words of the letter that King Sennacherib sent to mock the living God. Truly, O Yahweh, the kings of Assyria have laid waste to all the nations and all their lands. And they cast their gods into the fire. The Assyrians really did destroy them because they were not gods, but they were the work of human beings, wood and stone. Therefore, O Yahweh our God, save us from the hand of Sennacherib, that all the kingdoms of earth may know that you, O Yahweh, alone are God. So, King Hezekiah then prays before Yahweh, his God, in the temple of Jerusalem. And he waits for an answer. And his prayer is the opposite of Sennacherib's blasphemy. Sennacherib blasphemes and says, your God can't do anything. He's a liar. He's deceiving you. And King Hezekiah prays piously. And he says, you are the maker of heaven and earth. The reason those other gods were destroyed is because their gods were silver, gold, stone, wood, junk, garbage, no good. But you are the living God. Now let's see what happens to Hezekiah's faith. Because Isaiah is going to respond to him. We're at Isaiah chapter 37. And King Hezekiah of Judah has heard the blasphemous statements by King Sennacherib of Assyria. Sennacherib, who is attacking Judah. And Hezekiah takes this letter of blasphemy saying God is a liar and so on. And he prays and ask the Lord for help. And now in chapter 37, beginning with verse 21 and following, Isaiah gives an answer. And he says to him in verse 22, she despises you, laughs you to scorn, the virgin daughter of Zion. And daughter Jerusalem is behind you, and she just wags her head and says, shame on you, Assyria. So in other words, Isaiah speaks for the city of Jerusalem, that is Zion, and says, this is the city whom you, Sennacherib, have insulted and blasphemed, against whom you raised your voice and lifted your high eyes on high. When you, Sennacherib, were boasting and talking so big and thinking that you're such a big shot, you weren't just talking against us. As he says here in verse 23, you were speaking against the Holy One of Israel. And remember how Isaiah uses that name for God. God is the Holy One because He is above our sinful ways. Yahweh is greater than our sinful ways, but He is the Holy One of Israel. That is, He comes down to human history and shows how He loves us and guides us. And it is against God, who is holy and yet active with Israel, that King Sennacherib has boasted and said that King Sennacherib has more power than Yahweh. Are you in trouble, Sennacherib? I'm telling you, you've got trouble coming. Through your servants, you, Sennacherib, that's who he's speaking to, have insulted Yahweh. You said, with my many chariots, I climbed the mountain heights. I went to the back parts of Lebanon, which he did. Okay, he took all the way over Lebanon. I cut down its big cedar trees and its choice cypresses, which he did. As a matter of fact, he took lots of lumber from there and took it back to Assyria to make palaces. I reached its highest places, its highest mountains and forests. I dug wells and I drank water in foreign lands. I dried up the soles of the rivers of Egypt with my feet. Now what's he saying here? King Sennacherib is boasting. He claims, I did whatever I felt like doing. And if anybody doesn't like it, they can move. As a matter of fact, I don't like the way they look at me, so I'm going to make them move. And King Sennacherib took all kinds of people captive and so on. As I'll show you in some pictures in a minute. Haven't you heard? Now this is where Yahweh is speaking to Sennacherib still. Haven't you heard? I prepared this a long time ago. And I brought it to pass that you should reduce the fortified cities into heaps of ruins, while their inhabitants, with their power cut off, are dismayed and crushed and ashamed. And that they become like plants of the field, like the grass that is scorched on the rooftops. So Yahweh is explaining to Sennacherib, look, I know that you took 46 cities. That was my idea. I let you do it, Sennacherib, because I'm in charge of history, not you, you Shlemiel. I know whether you sit or stand. I know where you come or go. And I know your rage against me. Now here, they're quoting from Psalm 139, right? Psalm 139 says, I know whether you sit or stand, or whether you're at rest, or whether you're on the journey, and so on. And Yahweh says, I know that all about you, Sennacherib. You think you're so big shot. Okay? And I know how you rage against me. Now that is not a good idea, to rage against Yahweh. As if we humans have the right to say, Yahweh, you don't know how to run the world. I know it better than you do. Okay? Because of your rage against me, this is still Yahweh speaking to Sennacherib, and because your fury, Sennacherib, has reached my ears, I will put a hook in your nose. Now, Yahweh is going to go right inside the nose of King Sennacherib with a fish hook. He's going to slice it right up in there and catch him like a fish. I wouldn't like that. You know, just like you do with bulls, you put a hook in their nose, a ring in their nose, and you can pull them along. You've got a ring in a bull's nose and a long pole, you can pull a bull along. Even though he's stronger than you, he'll do whatever you want because it hurts. So also with Sennacherib. You put a hook in your nose, and I'll put my bridle in your mouth, and I'll make you return by the way you came. So Isaiah's word to Sennacherib is, you're going to get out of here. You boasted, but you are going to have to leave Jerusalem the way you came. All right? And then, verses 30 to 32, are words that are given to the people of Judah. It says, this shall be a sign for you, Hezekiah and Judah. This year you shall eat what grew up by itself, and next year what grew up by itself. Okay? So for 2 years you're going to just eat whatever grows up by itself, because you are not going to be able to go and plant your fields. For the next couple of years, the king of Assyria is going to be around. Okay? But in the third year, sow and reap, plant vineyards and eat their fruit. So after 3 years, you'll be able to plant your fields because the Assyrians will be gone. They'll be out of town. And the remaining survivors of the house of Judah shall strike root below and bear fruit above. In other words, you're going to do okay. For out of Jerusalem shall come a remnant from Mount Zion's survivors. The zeal of Yahweh of hosts shall do this. Now this fits the rest of Isaiah's prophecies, doesn't it? In the weeks that we've been going through the last month or so, we've seen how he prophesied, yes, Judah will be punished because they trusted in Egypt instead of trusting in Yahweh. And surely the Assyrians will punish them. We know that. But the people of Jerusalem will also be saved. Part of them, a remnant, will survive. And sure enough, that happened. Now, this is what happens. In verse 33 and following, it says, the king of Assyria will not be able to attack Jerusalem. Okay? And that Yahweh will shield his city for the sake of my servant David. Now, I've got some slides I'd like to show you at this point. And the first of these slides is a picture of King Sennacherib seated on his throne. And this is him seated on his throne at Lachish. And the people behind him are his own servants. And the guy in front of him is a Jew offering him up, you know, presents. As a matter of fact, we know from the second book of Kings, chapter 18, verse 13 and following, that King Hezekiah did send all kinds of possessions, gold and other metals, to King Sennacherib. Now, take a look at the next slide. And here, you see a picture of the palace of the king of Assyria. See, these large statues were cherubim. Okay, that's what a cherub looks like. You think of little babies with their diapers falling off, right? Well, this is not a baby with a diaper. This is a scary animal that is part human and part bull, and it has wings like a bird. And that this is a cherub. And what we see here in the book of Isaiah is that the angel of Yahweh struck the camp of the Assyrians with a plague, and 186,000 died, probably a bubonic plague. And they went back home to Assyria. And so Sennacherib did go back to his palace. And in the next slide, what you can see is this is one of the life-size bulls from his palace. This is what it looked like. And as you can see, it's a huge thing. This one is from the Louvre, which is a museum in Paris. And in the next slide, we also have another picture from the palace of Sennacherib. This is a man with fish in a net, symbolizing all the different countries that King Sennacherib had captured. In the next slide, we also see a picture of a boat. This is a hard one to see, but what it is a Phoenician boat, because King Sennacherib also captured the Phoenicians at this time. And in the next slide, what we see are some Jews being taken captive. You see a Jewish man standing next to some cattle, and you see their ribs are showing. Can you see that on your picture? Then there's a cart with a woman and a child on it. And these people were captured, some of the 200,000 people captured by King Sennacherib, and taken back with him to his palace in Assyria. Okay? But in spite of all of this, you know, King Sennacherib did not really capture Jerusalem. And even Herodotus, the Greek historian, admits that he tried to capture the city, but he couldn't do it. We have one last chapter to cover in the prophet Isaiah for this period of his life. And that is chapter 38. Now, in this chapter we see that King Hezekiah became seriously ill, ill to the point of death. And the prophet Isaiah came to him and said, thus says Yahweh, put your house in order, for you are about to die. You shall not recover. So Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to Yahweh. And he said, O Yahweh, remember how faithfully and wholeheartedly I conducted myself in your presence, and doing what was pleasing to you. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. Now, we don't know exactly why Hezekiah was punished with this sickness. Okay? The chronicler in Chronicles 32, you know, gives a suggestion, but the book of Isaiah and the book of Kings doesn't say why he got this sickness. He just did. And I can see that, you know, stress. You want to talk about stress. I mean, when Sennacherib comes with his army and wipes out 46 of your cities, leaving you with one, taking 200,000 of your people captive, leaving you with a few thousand, and just, you know, causing starvation and famine and all this stuff, I mean, that would cause me stress. And after the Assyrians leave in 701, then he gets sick. Okay? It'd get me sick. I don't blame the guy. So he prays, and he wept bitterly. Okay? But then, in verse 4, the word of Yahweh came to Isaiah. Go, tell Hezekiah, thus says Yahweh, the God of your father David. Now, he mentions his father David because Hezekiah is considered to be one of the best kings since David. Matter of fact, the best king of Judah since David. Because he got rid of the foreign worship and he knocked down the bad altars, the false altars of Yahweh. And the false altars of Baal and Ashtaroth that were all around the countryside. And he had everybody focus in on Jerusalem. And Yahweh says to him, I've heard your prayer and seen your tears. I will heal you. In 3 days you shall go up to Yahweh's temple. I will add 15 years to your life. I will rescue you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. And I will be a shield to the city. And then, you know, Isaiah ordered a poultice of figs to be taken and applied to the boil that he had so that he might recover. Now, this is a very interesting approach that we have over here in terms of dealing with sickness. First of all, as we see in the text here, that King Hezekiah prays, okay? And even though he's told he's going to die and not recover, he prays nonetheless. And Yahweh hears him and changes his mind. Now, how this fits into the plan of God, well, certainly God had known he would pray and change his mind. But, you know, perhaps even when it seems impossible for us to change God's mind, it is very important for you and for me to pray and ask God to help us. Okay? But then secondly, notice this. The prophet Isaiah gives him a new word and says, you will recover in 3 days. But does he just sort of leave it at that? No, of course not. He also puts a poultice, that is, a bag with some figs in it, to put on top of this boil that caused him the sickness in the first place, and it sucks out the poison. So he also gives him medicine. So just because the Lord says, I'm going to heal you, doesn't mean you can't use medicine. The two go together here. And we can use medicine even after the Lord might give you a word, he's going to heal you. Use your common sense, just like Isaiah did. And so after that, Hezekiah asks for a sign, and the Lord gives him a sign. The shadow of the sun goes backwards a few steps, and then goes on its way again. Okay, so Hezekiah believes from that sign, and he's healed. And then he gives us a hymn of thanksgiving. He says in verse 10, once I said, in the noontime of life, that is, in the middle of my life, I must depart to the gates of Sheol, the place of the dead, I have to go for the rest of my years. I said, I shall see Yahweh no more in the land of the living. See, the Jews believed that if you went to Sheol, the place of the dead, you couldn't see Yahweh. It's pretty much like what we talk about when we say purgatory. It's a place that's not heaven, it's not hell, but you can't see the Lord there. Okay? And that's what they meant by Sheol. And I shall not see my fellow men among those who dwell in the world. My tenth, like a shepherd's tent, is knocked down and taken away from me. In other words, my life is like a tent that's just been knocked down. And it's like a thread that's been cut. Okay? Day and night you give me torment from the sickness, and I cry out till dawn. Like a lion you break all my bones, and day and night you give me to torment. So like a swallow I utter shrill cries. Ooh, it hurts, it hurts. He's just sort of crying. I moan like a dove. My eyes grow weak, gazing heavenward. I can't see you. But, you know, he prays to the Lord. He knows that the Lord has done this to him. And he tells the Lord in verse 18, look, it's not Sheol that gives you thanks, and death doesn't praise you, but nor do those who go down to the pit await for your love. The living give you thanks as I do today. Fathers declare to their sons, O Yahweh, your faithfulness. Yahweh is their Savior. We shall sing to stringed instruments in the house of Yahweh all the days of our life. And so he recovers from his sickness after having prayed before the Lord. Now, this brings to an end this period of the life of Hezekiah and Isaiah. Hezekiah lived until 687. And at that point, you know, he died and his son took over. Isaiah seems to live to about that time, maybe a little bit later. But we see here how Yahweh used both of them to show His love and devotion and His righteousness. So must we learn from them both. God bless you. Thank you.